when Friedrich Engels proudly, as is supposed to be such a wonderful, pure scientific mind of his century, the 19th, together with Karl Marx, proclaimed, sneering at people who said that we have also to ask for people's wishes. Don't they count? Does it not count what people want? Does not common sense, even in its most stupid form, count in politics? Shouldn't it be reckoned with? And Engels said sneeringly, those people have no idea what blue wonders the human mind will experience, or common sense will experience, if it dares itself to enter the realm of science. This is in a way quite true. There isn't much that can be done with common sense in science. And science has to move far away from common sense in order to achieve its results. But science is not supposed to be concerned with human affairs. If it concerns itself with human affairs and tries to lead human affairs, then we could answer Friedrich Engels and know it by now because we have experience. If science dares to enter the field of human relations and of human affairs, the scientist will experience bloody wonders. They will not only experience them, they will bring them about. And they did. By trying to run politics scientifically, all the ideological wars of our time are caused. Hitler believed himself to be a scientist as well as the next man, and acting only according to quite known, overall known, scientific principles, the principles of scientific principles of blood research and race research and what else. We cannot talk, couldn't talk Stalin, nor can we talk Khrushchev out of the idea that they have the final scientific solution for all problems of mankind, and that it is only a question that they will be have to be ruthlessly applied in order to bring about the good. That's why they strike us sometimes so often as insane. They are not insane. Metaphysically, they are insane. That means they are entirely non-critical as to the philosophies, the basic philosophies they apply. They act on assumptions that are mere matters of belief. They enforce this belief by terror and propaganda. If they cannot do so, they ask us to take those things on belief, and they become almost holy men in preaching it to us, all of them. But they never challenge or even consider their assumptions. They act logically. Because we have found now, since we have that naked child of logic before us, without any clothes and any halo around its head, that it gives us account of what it is doing. Mathematics tells us, we mathematicians, we merely take a definite set of a few assumptions which we take for granted and no further challenge. We assume them as to be true. If we make those assumptions, then we promise you, if you accept those assumptions, we will build before your eyes a very fantastic and wonderful system of inner relations of forms, which is quite conclusive in itself and a sheer miracle. Well, it is. But this sheer miracle is not applied to human affairs. They do not tell me because H5 here is related to X1000 in this specific way. They do not tell me suddenly, and you see, you are X1000 and that is H5. And this will rule you now, and you have no mind of your own anymore. You just have to do what 86 says. The mathematicians are not crazy enough to do that, and if they were, they would be laughed at. But that is exactly what the pseudo-scientific logicians of our time are doing to us. They do not call it numbers. They call it ideas. And those ideas we are supposed to serve as no idol before has been served, with a ruthlessness and an absoluteness which no idol before Jehovah ever claimed. And Jehovah came up, so to speak, with the Jews in order to smash all those idols. Well, we are back to them, and to much worse ones than we ever had presented in former times of history. But to get hold of the two forms, of the clothes that make all those ghosts so ghost-like, and to get even, namely, materialism and idealism, as philosophic, logical systems of thought, even to get hold of the inner form that unites them both and makes it possible that they can be alternatively applied or even together applied, like in American foreign policy, namely the principle of this up to now hidden logos itself, the mere logicality of scientific or pseudo-scientific in human affairs, highly scientific in all natural affairs, physical affairs, forms. It is not enough to explain what has really happened, because we have not yet a content. We have a mere form. We do not have yet a content of which we could say, as well as this formality, this form of the ghost, its clothes, black and white, united by logos, appear, and all isms, all ideologies, all the ghosts that haunt us, not only communism, have in common, finally, this formal principle we were talking about. That's a step. But the question arises, ghosts are not only their clothes. So the clothes are the most frightening part of the ghosts and the most convincing one. They also have structure, content. What's the content? Is there a content principle, a principle of content, that all those ghosts that haunt us have in common? They seem at the first each far apart from the other. They are fighting, like in the last war, Bolshevism, as I might call it, because it is not really socialism, it is a developed socialism into a totalitarian principle, and racism of Hitler, they were fighting like hell. But we have seen that at some time of this war, it was for those ideologists who seemed to be so decided that each of them had the only right solution for everything here in his bare hand, how easy it was for them to conclude a pact, the Hitler-Stalin pact, which surprised especially all adherents of socialism tremendously, because they thought it never possible. There are still some here sympathizes with socialism in the old sense, which was once a very idealistic thing, who couldn't believe and cannot yet believe that socialism, the socialism in the Soviet Union, the supposed, could become anti-Semitic. Well, it has been anti-Semitic in a hidden form for 20 years. And it becomes more and more openly so, because the Russians saw that in certain parts of their political scheme, it would be extremely useful to give themselves an injection of another kind of ideology, because it is so prevalent in the dumb masses, namely racial ideology, and they learn to use it very, very well indeed for their purposes. They do it now with all the new nations in the Orient, and it is, if you analyze it, you find always a kind of mixture of both ideologies. Hitler tried that in the beginning too. He didn't call himself or his party for nothing National Socialist Party, Workers' Party of Germany. He tried also to play both cards and then decided for one. So there are affinities. Much as they seem apart, there are affinities which in cruder forms reveal themselves even more. When the Hungarian people in that almost bloodless revolutionary stage for this right for freedom of the for the pursuit of truth in a way unbelievably disciplined, we thought we would see a mob. We were all frightened. What did we see? The army went over to them, nobody was really harmed. Only the secret police of the Bolsheviks was shot. And even there, distinctions were made between some simple men and officers and generals. And if we inquire a little into the reasons, not the logic of it, but the real reasons, human reasons behind this strange kind of discipline. There was no discipline. Everybody was acting spontaneously. But they were acting on reasons. Then we find the phenomenon that the majority of the secret police in Hungary that oppressed the Hungarian people for the Russians have not even been Hungarians. They were not Russians either. Only the commanders were Russians. Where did they come from? If we analyze it further, then we see that indeed a very high percentage of them had been former Nazis, German Nazis. They had just changed the little signs on their arms from the crooked cross to the red with hammer and sickle. It was that easy. And it turned out, logos again, that they of course were wonderful for the Russian purpose because they used the same methods. In the method of terror and propaganda, they were trained for it, of whatever ideology they come. So the interchange of those people among the different ideologies, and we have seen already many footloose intellectuals of whom we can say that they have been almost already in every camp of one of those ghosts we have around. They have already served many of them. And they found always a career and found it always easy. If we look farther into the matter, then we find that in Eastern Germany, in the secret police again, there are all the trained figures of the Gestapo, the same ones. The Russians have taken them over there too. And they know what they are doing. many more of those affinities between the different systems we will see in the run of this course. And they make us trust that there might be not only a hidden a principle that they all have in common, a formal principle like the logos with the forms of appearance and materialism and idealism, but also a principle of content. This principle of content, if we could call now in another metaphor, to change metaphors, because I am not Shakespeare, I am not obliged to stay in my metaphor, I am no artist. I change metaphors freely. To call now materialism and idealism and the logos, what we call the formal principle they have in common, the mother of those, all those ghosts. Who would be the father? Because there has to be a father too. This is the principle of content we are at the moment looking for. I introduce it at once because it has been talked about by somebody in the same way, quite innocently, but here not innocently, but consciously, as Karl Marx had talked about the specter that haunted Europe, communism, innocently, because he hoped this is the gross hope of humanity, and by no means a specter. It has turned out to be a specter. Friedrich Nietzsche said, the most terrible of all the hosts of humanity has come to our house, nihilism. The most terrible of all the guests, Gäste, German for guests, Gäste, Geister, German for ghost. Friedrich Nietzsche was a three-dimensional writer, and he meant a ghost. He has pointed it out in his later works and in his other works very often that he meant a ghost. Something has gotten hold of us, he complains. And he said, make no mistakes, I am analyzing it, because it has gotten hold of me more than of you yet. I am one of the most infected modern intellectuals. The pale ghost, the most terrible of all guests of the human mind, has entered our minds, and especially mine, he was arguing. He said another time, please don't mistake me when I fight so much against Richard Wagner. I loved nobody that much as I loved Richard Wagner in my life. But Richard Wagner is, as well as I am, a child of modern nihilism. And since I want to operate this nihilism out, to get at its root, to find out what it really is, what I am sick of, so permit me also to take Wagner apart, because I know he is as well sick of it as much as I am, and it is our pride that we are the ones, the greatest intellects of our time in that sense, the most typical intellects of our time. We just had to fall prey to this ghost, the first and the most. And all we can do is, he didn't say, this I say of him, all he did was trying to perform what a doctor performs who infects himself with an unknown disease, ready to die for it, with it, by it, only in order to be able to keep a record of all the phenomena the disease produces, as minutious as he possibly can, till his last breath. This is exactly what Friedrich Nietzsche was doing with that thing he considered as the essential illness, like a metaphysical tuberculosis. This ghost, of which we cannot get hold really, nihilism. So nihilism, as well as the father, this is assumed by me, yeah, I have to prove the point. I just make a statement. I consider nihilism, nihilistic thinking, to be the originator, the father, of all the ghosts that haunt us, as well as I consider and prove materialism and idealism and their inherent common logos is the mother of those ghosts. So we have to occupy ourselves with a short analysis of nihilism, and then we are immediately in the topic. Because nihilism as a thinking, as a consequent modern approach to basic metaphysical assumptions, beliefs, faith, started unseen first in the very field of ethics. That means in the innermost apparatus where human beings make their decisions and pass their judgments as to the value or non-value of life, of their own existence, as to the value or non-value of the world and the existence of the world. In this innermost center where such decisions are made, where the position that man takes towards himself, the world, and everything, and nature, and God, is really made, in the center, so to speak, of all human performances, which is mostly hidden, very rarely consciously developed. It is hidden by what we call moralities. Moral questions and ethical questions are, especially today, for us almost the same. We mix the terms up. We have no idea anymore what we mean when we say such things. I hear strange things. Lately I heard case of a money-raising campaign in a certain college. I heard that advertisers now, money raisers, say, well, we advise against those old systems of money raising where money raisers got a certain percentage share in what they are, in the money they raise. We consider them now to be unethical. Gee, they are concerned with ethics? Should we perhaps learn from them what ethics is? What do they mean when they abuse this word? What has ever been ethical about them? What could be possibly ethical about making money or providing for a better livelihood? This has nothing whatsoever to do with ethics. But they fill it with ethical principles. They come to us in a halo and say, and we have revised it. Oh, Socrates was asked, so formally you considered it to be ethical that one gets a percentage of the money one receives. And now it isn't ethical no more, so you even improved ethics. Oh, please teach me. I was thinking all my life, longing to find somebody who would tell me what ethics is. Wouldn't you do, Mr. Advertiser? Are you the one? Oh, please tell me. I am so eager to learn. And then he would corner him like a rat and kill him. This is principles. So-called principles. Ethical. Non-ethical. Now what's behind it? If they had said merely, you see, formerly we thought it was moral to do it that way, it could be, yeah, and now we have new morals, yeah? And then we could have at least talked about the matter. And we would have said, like Socrates, what do you mean by morals? You mean it has anything to do with morality, or do you just mean a certain set of rules of the game? And you change that set of rules of the game, then we could already talk about it with common sense. Again, you seem to be a faker when you claim moral principles are involved here, let alone ethical principles, but they claim ethical principles. Now let's have a look at reality. Because here again, there's an ethical principle conceived in an idea form, idealists. They are such idealists. They try to show us a piece of fiction that hides their reality perfectly well. What really has happened, and has happened everywhere, happening everywhere, is that the free enterprising capitalist and the free enterprising money maker, to which group this money raiser who takes a percentage belongs, yeah, is eased out by corporations who want to have their jobs sure, which has, among other things, the results that when this money raiser came to my institution, let's say, who took it on percentage and told me I didn't raise any money, was just too bad for me, but also for him. He had taken a risk. The corporation asked first for $40,000 of my insurer, and there's no guarantee that I ever will see a penny of their money raising. If they fail, they didn't fail, I failed, or my institution failed. Now to call this modern business principle, which is very adequate to all other modern business principles we have, I do not say it's unmoral, I do not say it's unethical, it has nothing to do with any of those terms. I am much more generous with them than they are with us. But one thing is sure, if we use common sense, we want to hear their real reason that is behind this change. We feel entitled to hear their real reason, about that we can talk. But if they come to us and make themselves the model of new ethical reformers, and we have them to accept them like a kind of priests, that is really asking a little bit too much of anybody with common sense. If you think this a little example over, then it might be easy for you to find how many psychiatrists and even physical doctors and social workers and social engineers already are applying the same trick to us. Hiding behind a kind of expert position, which they claim, in addition to everything else, to be highly ethical. They are also voluntary individual saviors of humanity. They know better what's good for me, and they will impose it on me, if only by suggestion and by trick. Again, we have to ask, do such things really have to do, or can they have to do, possibly anything with ethical principles or even moral rules? Is that not just a tricky aim where moral terms and even ethical terms are used in order to hide a definite, as Nietzsche would say, will to power over the mind of other and the bodies of other men? The conditio sine qua non namely what makes all those sham performances possible, not only the big ghosts upon the altars, but also those little ghosts and specters that seem to haunt so many people in their professions today.